Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Stu Whiffin, sitting opposite me always, Blake Harrison. You alright?
I'm good, mate. I'm here from sunny, or not really so sunny, Belfast, because I'm working at the moment. So,
nice.
Yeah. It's all...
You said work. You've literally just told me I had a Muay Thai lesson yesterday.
Yeah. So it's been like, we've done like makeup and costume and all that, and proper filming starts on Tuesday. I think we've got rehearsal tomorrow. But yeah, I'm in Belfast and I thought, well, do you know what? I just want to see if there's a local MMA gym, see if I can carry on doing a little bit of training. And I went to SBG Belfast and had a Muay Thai, a little one-on-one session. A lovely man called Muay Thai Mick was holding the pads. And
what's the chances if you're christened Muay Thai Mick, you should end up becoming a Muay Thai instructor? That's brilliant.
I know, what's it's great. I mean, those parents really paved a career for him there with a name like Muay Thai Mick. No, that's his Instagram name. And it was a fantastic session. Really, really enjoyed it. Really loved it. Was absolutely shattered afterwards. And my shins are a little bit bruised from the old Muay Thai pads because I haven't hit those for a while. And I've got such delicate skin. But
of course.
But no, it was great. It was good. What have you been up to?
This is also the first one we've done where I can't see you because you're recording off of Wi-Fi in the suite in the hotel that you're staying in. You're literally doing everything you can to get the best Wi-Fi. So you've shut down you've shut the camera off and you've built some kind of den from what I can picture, from what you were telling me, out of cushions to kind of absorb any echo in the room.
That's sort of
Love it.
I wish it was a suite. It's a perfectly fine apartment, except for a few little things. Like, you'd think that they'd go all out, bit of glitz and glamour, you know. There was like light fixtures that aren't working. The headboards are like falling off the bed. They're just sort of rested against the wall behind the bed and they're just kind of falling about a bit. And the living room, the living room smells like old man. Like, there's no other way to describe it. It smells like old man. I don't know if it's people been smoking in there or what, but I've got all the cushions out because I hid them in this cupboard because they stink. So I've had to buy a couple of those like Glade plugins to try and sort out the smell in this living room.
At what age do you start to smell of old man? Because I'm worried. Like, I'm thinking, like, when you left my house the other day, did you get home and go, oh God, honestly, Kerry, his house, it smelled of old man.
I don't know. It must be something like, I'm assuming smoking has something to do with it. And right. I'm assuming it's probably like an unhealthy intake of Werther's Originals. That's what I'm assuming is what's led to the smell in this product. Although someone freaked me out because they said there was some story of like, I don't know where this was. I'm giving you half a story now. But there was some story of like a bloke going to like an apartment somewhere or wherever, a hotel, whatever it was. And so, and for some reason saying the room smelt like old lady or something like that. And it turns out there was an old woman living in the walls of the apartment.
Oh, fuck off.
That's what I've been told. I think it might be an urban legend. This is what I've been told.
What, like literally some woman that's like an inch thick living in a cavity wall?
Have you not seen Encanto? It happens. Bruno lived in the walls. I know we're not supposed to talk about Bruno, but he lived in the walls. So maybe it's something like that. I don't know. So now I'm freaked out that there might be an old man living in the walls of this apartment. I don't know.
Oh, the unnecessary drama you called. It's ridiculous. So in regards to your old man smelling cushions, see, if I went in a room and it smelt of, like, stale smoke and Werther's, I'd probably go, is there any chance, like, is there any other rooms? Because the stuff here, it smells like someone's been smoking in it. And I mean, but no one knows who I am. So people would just be, all right, fucking hell. And like, and I'd probably change the room and then probably mutter that I was a fucking tosser after I walked off. If you're off the telly, that's magnified by 10, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
because 100% people would be like, we had that Neil from the Inbetweeners in the other night. Arsehole, mate, what a diva. Like, instantly, like, they're not going to say, oh, he was a really nice fellow, he just asked if he could have the cushions changed, didn't he? Yeah. That story don't sell, does it?
No, I'm definitely, you know, I've been a bit concerned about that. But as a joke, the second AD on this job, who's like, basically the second AD sort of like, does a lot of the scheduling and is like your sort of like liaison when it comes to anything to do with the filming, like the times that you're in, who's picking you up, where they're picking you up, when they're picking you up, what scenes you're doing, all that kind of stuff. That's what second AD does. And before
bit
we started
like servant,
filming,
is it? Is it a bit like a servant?
No, they're very well respected by some people. Okay. In the email, it's our first ever email exchange I've had with this guy, and he was like, oh, just so, do you have any, like, dietary requirements for the caterers, anything like that, blah, blah. I was like, no, none of that. And I put that, but I'm assuming you've got my rider, which means that, you know, I just have, like, blue M&Ms in my trailer and a cardboard cutout of Philip Schofield. And I just said this as a joke, thinking I was really funny, told my wife about it. She was like, that's the first email you've sent this guy. That's just weird. It's not funny. It's just really, really odd. And I was like, oh, no, it'd be fine, it'd be a laugh. And I was proved right, because when I turned up and got into my trailer, there was a cardboard cutout of Danny DeVito saying, I'm not Schofield, in my trailer.
Do you know what? That, I don't know if that's him trying his best to give you what you wanted, or he's just fucking one step ahead of you. Like, he sounds like a funny dude, man.
No,
I love that.
He was
I've
great.
Seen your Schofield and I've upgraded you to a DeVito.
Well, that's it. It's an upgrade, isn't it? So, so yeah, it's great. No, he was a right laugh. He's a good lad. And, yeah, we've had a few chuckles with Danny over the last couple of days. So it's been good. It's been a nice start and it's a lovely group of people. So it's been good. Other than the old loving man that smell and potentially having a flatmate I can't see living in the walls, other than that, it's all been great.
I want you to take a picture of you with DeVito for our socials that we can put up, because I can only imagine you being as gangly as you are. It's literally going to look like twins, right?
Yeah, I might need to like pad out like my shirt to make it look a bit more muscular.
You can do it.
Yes, get it down now. Get down, down. Who is your daddy? All and right. What does it do?
UFC 276, which took place last night. We're recording this Sunday evening, so we've all managed to sort of catch up and everything. I've not seen Fight Pass prelims yet, but I'm aware of the results, and I've seen a few little highlights of them. Also, did receive a message this week explaining that I need to get off the fence more.
Oh, you need to get off the fence.
Apparently, apparently I sit on the fence, so... yeah, so let's see how this episode goes.
Oh, whose message are you saying you sit on the fence?
Oh, I'm not going to name and shame. He was only having a laugh, but I found out his full address, and I've parked my car outside his house for the last 2 days. I've watched him come and go. He's got a very sad life. right, are we going to start? We've not discussed this yet. Are we going to start at the very top and then work our way down?
I mean, there's not really a lot
that we can skip, is there? Because it's all gold.
No. No, I think we just go with what happened at the top of the card. So Israel Adesanya, Jared Cannonier. A lot of the narrative coming out of the fight is it was another very dominant but slightly dull title defence from Izzy. Did you find it particularly dull? What's your thoughts on the fight and everything?
I picked my phone up a couple of times, which is not a good sign.
It's not.
That's
what I do when you're talking. Like right now, you can't see me, but I'm just looking at my phone.
Sorry, mate. Let me just send this. 2 seconds. Yep. I mean, it didn't help that it was following on from something spectacular. But, yeah, I thought he was clearly a much better fighter. I think we maybe sold Jared a little short in the pre-show because I think we both thought it was going to be an absolute Izzy masterclass and not necessarily a stoppage, but an easy night's work. And it was a slightly easy night's work. I don't, you know, he post fighter said that, you know, he weren't firing on all cylinders. He was a bit disappointed in his performance. But even on his worst day, he still beats the number two ranked fighter. I thought Jared Cannonier put on a proud performance. He should be very pleased with what he'd done. The worst bit of commentating was DC. He come out with some incredible logic in the fifth round. He went, "He just needs to start throwing bombs." Oh, excellent. That's what he needs to do. He needs to knock him out and win the fight. Ah, wow. I bet he's never thought of that.
The language he's used there, I guess, isn't quite right, but I sort of know where he's coming from, because I would say you can criticise Cannonier a little bit. Like, for little caveat to this is you don't know what it's like to fight someone like Israel Adesanya until you're in there. But I think when you know you're at the very least 3-1 down, if not 4-0 down going into the fifth round, you've not taken extraordinary amounts of damage or anything. Like, you got lit up a little bit with jabs, you got a little bit of swelling, like, but you've not taken loads and loads of damage. It's like, just fucking go for it, man. Like, you're not getting a title
shot. If you go for it, what do you mean by go for it?
Me personally, because I think...
I don't imagine it's very easy to hit him.
No, it's not. It's clearly not. That one of his great things, Adesanya, is that he's so long, he manages distance and range so well, and he can avoid the strikes. But I think... if you're never going to get that shot again, which, let's be honest, it's going to be unlikely that Cannonier is, but who knows, you know, whatever, if the right things line up for him, then fine. I don't know how old Cannonier is, but I don't think he's young.
I think he's quite old, isn't he? I think he's considerably older than Izzy.
I've got a feeling he's like 37 or something like that. I don't know. So I just think that... and I think the same with Robert Whittaker in the second fight, maybe, as well. Just throw a bit more caution to the wind. Throw, like, again, I'm not a fighter. I couldn't imagine going through one or two jabs or a right hand from Izzy in order to try and land a couple of shots. That's not me. But those guys are fighters. They have been in situations where they have to bite down on the mouthpiece and just fucking go for it. Because
if
they don't, that's it. Game over.
You had your one shot, and
that's it done. And I think you can criticise Izzy a little bit, but he's dominant. He's winning, and he's winning comfortably. Yes, as a fan, it's not overly exciting. And if you were in America and being told, do you want to pay £75 for this, you might go, oh, I don't know, Izzy's had quite a few boring fights lately. But ultimately... he's doing the right thing. He's keeping that belt. He's doing things dominantly. He's taking very little damage. Look how, like, pristine his face looked at the press conference and stuff. Looked like he hadn't been in a fight. It's on the person fighting him to go, I might have to take some to give some. And when you're 4-0 or 3-1 down going into the fifth round and your corner's even calling for it, it's like, we need a stoppage. I feel like he's going to come away from that and rewatch that fight and go, fuck, man, I wish I'd have done more. I have got a little bit of regret with that fight.
Okay. I think we can both agree it wasn't the most explosive and exciting fight. But, you know, Izzy gets another W now. That's 23 wins, and obviously, we can talk about who's next in line, and we'll get on to that fight. But it looks like Pereira's going to be next in line. Izzy seems to want that. Obviously, there was loads of stuff being sort of spoken about in the pre-fight conference as well. I guess it's an exciting fight to look forward to. There's the narrative there, you know, we spoke about it on the pre-show as well. You know, it's clear what the UFC were doing, giving an unranked fighter to the number four ranked opponent. It's to set up, you know, this, you know, this, this sort of the little sort of chink in Izzy's armour. You know, the thing that I'm sure he'd like to, you know, the wrong he'd like to right. And I think we're going to get something interesting. I think if it, you know, we do get a kickboxing match, we'll talk more about this when we get to the next fight. But I think, is there anyone else that's going to get the Izzy shot? It's got to be Pereira, right? I've not heard Dana say anything since.
No, it's I think it's 100% going to be Pereira unless there's some kind of injury or something. So I think that's kind of pretty much ironclad. The thing that was the most entertaining thing about the main event was Izzy's walkout. Loved the Undertaker stuff with a walkout. I'm all here for it.
So I woke up, and I come downstairs to, at 5 a.m. and just before Volksfight. After Volksfight, I thought, do you know what? I'll stick something on our little... We've got a little WhatsApp group, which is me, Blake, Scoobies Pip, and Brian Lacey. And then I just put on about Volk's performance. Then I thought, oh, shit. Like, Brian, I know that you and Pip were staying up. I thought, Brian's not up. Oh, bollocks. So I removed it from there and then sort of chimed back out of that group. And then at that point, I know that you're a wrestling, you know, you was a wrestling fan as a kid. And I know that Pip still is a wrestling nerd. and then I just saw...
I love that when you're a kid, you're a fan. But when you're a grown-up, you're a nerd.
And you know, I mean, there was lots of stuff in that pre-fight thing, digging out Izzy for his cartoons and stuff. I love it. You know, I think like I'm all over what Izzy's about. I think he's an absolute cool cat. But one thing I've never understood is wrestling, and I just see him with that, and I just thought, and I just literally messaged people, went, "Is this some wrestling nerd shit?"
you don't know the you must know the Undertaker.
I'm fucking 49, Blake.
How do you not know the Undertaker? Yeah, but he was around in like the fucking early 90s and shit.
Yeah, but I was out going to clubs and stuff like that then. Remember how old I am? Oh, like, man. Literally, wrestling for me was Saturday lunchtimes watching Big Daddy and Giant Asax.
Oh, mate, you've missed out. You've missed out, mate. The Undertaker was an absolute legend.
Obviously, you could tell that everybody was losing their shit at that walkout.
Daniel Cormier fucking great, loved it. He absolutely loved it. But yeah, no, that was the most entertaining thing about the main event for me. And Izzy Pereira next seems like the obvious thing that will be happening. What do you do with Jared Cannonier? My thought might be, Paulo Costa is fighting Luke Rockhold soon, and
is that a super heavyweight or is that
good point? If it happens at middleweight, which is a big if,
I mean, the thing is, Jared Cannonier's fought at heavyweight. Let's get them both in there at heavyweight.
100%. But if Costa beats Rockhold, I think Costa Cannonier is a great fight. If Rockhold wins, then I might want to keep him away from Cannonier, because Rockhold's such a name that if he wins against Costa and then gets just one other win against kind of whoever, he could then fight for the belt and it's a big fight. So I don't know.
That's a kickboxing match I'd like to watch, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I think Izzy styles on Rockhold all day long. But then Rockhold is that kind of mixed martial artist where he's got good grappling. He's a big guy. He's long, not as long as Izzy, but I mean... Yeah, but anyway, regardless, I think if Costa beats Rockhold, Cannonier Costa's a really good fight to have. As you say, we will talk about the Pereira Adesanya probably upcoming fight when we get to the Pereira Strickland fight. Shall we just move on to what was another example of dominance, but thoroughly entertaining dominance in Alexander Volkanovski?
Incredible.
I had, and I think you agreed with me in the pre-fight show, some really sneaky gut feeling that Holloway was going to do it.
And why would you not think that? Look at as we spoke about, like Holloway's recent performances, insane. Yeah. But then look at Volks, insane. Like these two, as we've said so many times, are just head and shoulders above everyone else in that division.
Yeah.
And then you've realised after last night that Volk's gone up another level now. Like, it was so dominant. And, like, and no one wants to see Max Holloway lose. You know, everyone loves Max. And, you know, you could tell by the crowd they were booing Volk as soon as he come out. But, oh, man, you know, it's often said there's levels to this game. But he was just different level. Like, he was so quick. His hands were rapid. And I think by the end of the sort of... Or probably even the first round, I think you could see that Max was thinking, oh, no, this seems to be a little different from the last one. Like, it didn't seem that close, and it never felt at any point like Volk was in trouble. He seemed to be enjoying it. He seemed to be so comfortable in there, you know, everything, you know, wanting a high five before every round, and, like, there was chitter-chatter in there. His confidence seemed to be booming. Like, I don't know, I know he trained at City for this one. He's obviously, you know, he's training with some killers there. And whatever he's doing, it just felt like he was, he was in a league of his own last night. And I started, when he got to sort of rounds three and that, and obviously the cut on Maxi's, you know, eye was a nasty cut. And he just looked beaten up. And normally Max Holloway beats people up. You know, you often see these sort of pictures of Max Holloway in the back of an ambulance with somebody that he's just destroyed. And Max looked smashed to pieces. And Volk, like, is he? Just looked fine. Like, I mean, I know he broke his hand, didn't he? He's broke a bone in his hand, I think.
Yes.
Volk. Yeah. So I don't know how long.
Yeah, which is a shame because it seemed like he could be having another either title defence or moving up to lightweight. We'll get on to what Volk does next in a bit. But yeah, the hand injury is a real shame. But he says he broke it in round two. I mean, then he carried on with that performance with a broken hand. I mean, that's incredible. That the break has not been confirmed, but he's pretty confident because he said he did a similar thing in his left hand after the second Max fight. But to put on that performance and with a broken hand after round two, I mean, that's crazy. The way he was talking to him, as you say, like in round one, he was saying, I'm too fast for you. Round two, when he cut Max with that big right hand, he was like, oh, that's bad. And you're like, Jesus Christ. He was doing to Max Holloway what Max Holloway did to Calvin Kattar, where he was chatting to him and just dominating him and really putting a pace on him. 50-45.
Was
50-45, man.
Amazing. He's got to be one of the greatest featherweights of all time.
I think so. I think there's still an argument to be made for Aldo just because of the dominance he had with the WEC as well and all that. Yeah. But I think he's got to be above Max now. I mean, I can't remember how many title defenses Max had, but Max dominated Aldo a couple of times, I think. Maybe Anthony Pettis as well to win an interim belt at some point. I can't remember. I can't remember. Oh, Brian Ortega, obviously, he put a real beating on. But I think Volk now, especially when in context, when you look at how dominant Max has been over all of the other contenders that he's fought, for Volk to do that was so special. And he put in the press conference the second performance into perspective. And I didn't really know this, or I didn't quite remember this. When Volk fought Max for the second time, which I rewatched recently, and I have to say, there's more of an argument for Max winning that fight than I ever remembered. When I watched it live, I thought Volk came back and did really well. But when you watch it again, Max dropped Volk in the first, he dropped him in the second, and then every round after that was so close that I can totally understand why people thought Max won that fight. I think after rewatching it, I was really torn between who won that fight. But Volk was talking about, on the night of that second fight, USADA knocked on his door when he was like halfway through sleeping, when he had 4 hours left of sleep or whatever it was, waking him up, getting him to piss or whatever and all that so they could test it. And then he said he couldn't get back to sleep, so he took melatonin, and then he woke up feeling a bit drunk, and he was sluggish and his reactions were off and everything was off. And he says, you look at that fight now, and you know I wasn't lying, because look at what I just did to him, being like hell happy and healthy and on form. Absolutely phenomenal performance. Utterly incredible. He's got to be up there as one of the pound-for-pound greats. When you're talking about pound-for-pound greats at the moment, you're looking at Usman, Adesanya, and Volkanovski. I think because Volkanovski's so entertaining, there's an argument for him to go number one, but I think you've got to have Usman. I think for maybe the dominance and title defences that he's had, you could have Adesanya, but then middleweight is nowhere near as talented as featherweight, so you could swap those two around and have Volk as your number two pound for pound at the moment and have Izzy behind him. I don't know, it's a bit of a weird debate anyway, pound for pound, but I do think that there's a strong, strong argument for Volkanovski being the number one pound for pound guy on the planet. I would rank him second, maybe behind Usman, but yeah, if you've got Volkanovski as your number one pound for pound guy on the planet at the moment, I won't argue with you.
100%, 100%. So obviously a lot of chit chat about going up and fighting Charles. Obviously he was there last night. I did hear him say, we discussed it pre-fight, you know, does he go straight into a title shot? Volks clearly believes that should be the case. You know, he's proved himself. You know, he's something special now, man. It's like, and I know we lean towards him because, you know, we got to have him on here as a guest. And if you've never listened to that episode, go listen to it because, yeah, he's a real lovely stand-up guy. But yeah, it looks like the Charles thing could happen. Let's find out a little bit more about his hand. But
you weren't up for it in the pre-fight show. Have you changed your mind because of that performance? Or
no, I've changed my mind because that guy said I need to get off the fence.
Well, I think there's part of me that would like Volkanovski to just stay at featherweight and dominate it and really cement himself as like the greatest featherweight of all time. And I think he could just do with a couple more title defences to do that. But having said that, no one really is leaping out. I know Josh Emmett just had a win, but it was slightly controversial. Arnold Allen's on a 9-fight win streak, but he just never quite gets that momentum going when he has a win. Yair Rodriguez is fighting
Emmett. Yeah, he's fighting Ortega, isn't he?
Yeah, and if Rodriguez wins, he's probably a front runner because he's a big name and he's an entertaining fighter. But again, I don't necessarily think he should go straight in for it. I think when you look at Rodriguez, Emmett and Arnold Allen, two of those guys should have a fight and work out who the number one guy is, and that guy fights Volk for the belt next. That's what I think.
Definitely. And I'm not being funny. You've got to have some serious self-confidence if you watched that last night and thought, I can beat him.
Yes. Yeah. Which fighters do?
I'm sure, but fuck me. He done that to Max Holloway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? 50-45, ridiculous.
Do you think, if say, for example, they say, sorry, Islam Makhachev, and I know we're going to upset Khabib here, but you go and fight Dariush for a number one contender shot, vacant title fight between Volkanovski and Charles Oliveira for the lightweight belt, who do you favour in that fight?
Do you know what?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You can't write Charles off.
No.
You know, you've seen him be, you know, against the ropes and then just pull off some fucking spectacular shit. But I don't know, like, Charles Oliveira is no better fighter than Max Holloway. And I don't know. I just think Volk's small. And I don't know, like, if that's going to be to his advantage or not. I'm not sure.
Here's something with that. When it comes to, like, lightweight's got so many great grapplers in it. I wonder if being small is an advantage. Like, I could be chatting completely out of my arse. But when you look at someone like a Dan Hooker or these, like, tall, lean guys, it's kind of like there's a lot to be able to kind of get under the hips and take you down and stuff. Volkanovski's really quick and he's short. I wonder if, like, the Makhachevs and Charles Oliveira's and that, like, when they're trying to grapple him, if it's harder to grapple him because he's got that low centre of gravity and you have to get down really low to try and shoot on him and stuff. And it might actually work in his favour. I could be chatting shit. Anyone that's a proper wrestler out there can get in touch with us and tell us whether I'm right or wrong.
But not just wrestling. If you look at striking, like, to use Mike Tyson as an example, look how short Mike Tyson was in the heavyweight division. And he used that height and that sort of leverage of coming in so low and throwing him uppercuts. He used it to his advantage. You know, he was fighting... Most fighters would have definitely been a foot taller than Mike Tyson, and he used it to his advantage. So
but that's because he had such a powerful... He had a power advantage over so many people, didn't he? Volk's not got that. You say what you want about Volk. He's great. He works so hard, but he's not a knockout artist, is he? He's not a one-punch power guy.
I don't know. I mean, Korean Zombie, you know, he knocked him all over the fucking place.
Yeah, but that was a cumulative damage. That's what I'm saying. It wasn't like Josh Emmett will put your lights out very, very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, Volk's not necessarily... He's dominant over a period of time. A bit like Max. Max doesn't knock people out super quick. He just smashes people over the course of... Well, Charles can't he? We saw what he did to Gaethje. We saw what he did to Chandler. I mean, and he's got the grappling as well.
Did you see a little bit of beef between Chandler and Dustin?
I like that. I don't mind seeing that fight. I'm all over that.
I was like, oh, hello. This could be... That'd be a right barnstormer. That would... I'm all up for that. 100%.
Spicy.
Well, we spoke about, you know, potential for where Max goes now on the pre-show. You just hope that he heals well and be interested to see where he goes next. But we've got so many fights to talk about. We've been going half hour already, so I think we need to start sort of piling through this, because the next fight is the one that I was so happy to watch. Sean Strickland, we can put him in a little room with Bryce Mitchell. I see what he was doing at the pre-fight conference. He seized the moment and he got all the column inches. You know, everyone was talking about him. He said some stuff that I didn't like. He said some stuff that, from my stance, felt a bit homophobic. You know, just the use of words in framing it in the wrong way. And it didn't sit right with me. And I think he completely looked past Alex Pereira. He was seemed more interested in digging out Izzy. Pereira just sat there, just let him have his way. And he gobbed off to everyone. And he wrote a check he couldn't cash. And he went in there. He stood upright. And he, for some stupid reason, thought, I'm going to stand and strike with this guy. Night, night.
Yeah. Absolutely terrible decision. I don't know what he thought the game plan was. Maybe get Pereira comfortable with striking and then shoot when he's less expecting it, or I don't know, man. I'm sure that wasn't his corner's game plan. It couldn't have been. And in the pre-fight kind of interviews he had and stuff, he was talking about that he is going to wrestle, and he didn't. But yeah, that was such a bad decision and a bad way to go about that fight. I agree with you on all the pre-fight chat. Some of his stuff that he said was entertaining when he was talking about someone asked him maybe about getting advice from Izzy, and he's like, well, what's the advice he's going to give me for the Pereira fight? Like, what not to do? Don't take a nap in the middle of the ring. I'm like, that's fun. That's great. Getting at the champ. You're laying seeds for if you win. But then when he starts talking about, like, oh, he's gay watching, he's always thinking, like, well, now you've lost me, mate, because it's just unnecessary. And it is homophobic, and it's just, yeah, it's a shame. Because, as you say, there were points in that press conference where he was actually being entertaining and saying things that could lead to some good promo for a future fight with Izzy, and then he goes and ruins it with the other really dumb stuff that he says. So I am quite glad he got laid out for that.
Unfortunately, like, you never see fighters, you know, and we've seen it, you know, I'm not going to start calling out fighters that have said it. But, you know, there's been plenty of instances where that kind of phrasing and sort of, you know, use of the word gay in a very detrimental way has been used quite a lot. And no one ever seems to be sort of made accountable for it. They never seem to sort of be pulled on it, which is a shame. But
especially when, like, you're one of your most dominant champions ever, Amanda Nunes, is gay. Like, she's like a poster woman for your organisation. I know she recently got beat, but she was like the queen of MMA for a while.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. She's gay. Like, back her, defend her, stuff like that. You got, like, people that we love, like Molly McCann, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are huge fans of Molly McCann as well. Like, just back those people and back those fighters as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was
London Pride yesterday, and it was a lovely little moment to see him get spanked on his ass after saying such dumb shit. Okay, so obviously we spoke about it. Now we know where Pereira's going next. It looks like he's going to be the title shot. And we should also credit him with, you know, an incredible strike, and then obviously he clumped him again as he was sort of desperately trying to sort of get to his feet. But yeah, he looked terrifying, I thought.
What do you think of an Adesanya fight then? I haven't watched his two previous kickboxing fights with Adesanya. I have seen the knockout, and it looked really bad in that, I think, second fight. Adesanya was like revived with like an oxygen mask and all sorts. It looked really bad. But Adesanya has a constant narrative in the kind of pre-fight press conference and all that stuff of like, have you seen the actual fight? Like, I put him on skates early and I was beating him up, and then he landed the shot, and he was like, you know, it's quite a bad quote, isn't it? But like, if I put you on skates again, you're going to be frozen like Elsa, or whatever it is that he was saying, which is a bit of a bad line. But point being, in the 4 ounce gloves, he thinks he'd be able to get the better of him like he did early in his kickboxing fight, and then not let him recover to be able to land that big shot that knocks him out. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I haven't seen any of those kickboxing fights, but just from watching Pereira's very short journey in the UFC, would you favour him against Adesanya, or would you favour Adesanya?
I think... I don't know. I've not seen enough MMA from Pereira to make a decent argument for him. I've seen Izzy, obviously, you know, maintain where he is, you know, for a long time, and look, you know, 9 times out of 10, incredible. I can't not make a call, can I? I'll be sitting on the fence. I think it's like anything, isn't it? You think if you've got a multi-skilled, you know, tricky fighter like Izzy, you know, you've got to, as you said with Jared, like, what, bite down on the gum piece, you know, put yourself in the firing line, try and get that finish, because you're being schooled. But yeah, if you do land that shot and you've got that sort of power, then, you know, he's done it before. There's no reason why he can't do it again. But I'm sure that Israel Adesanya that would step in the octagon in the UFC against Alex Pereira will be a far different Izzy than he last fought against. So I'm gonna go with Izzy. What about you?
I think I'll probably chop and change my mind over the course of the next few months or whenever it is that they finally get to fight each other.
Get off the fence, Blake.
No, that's not on the fence. I'll say I'm going to chop and change my mind. I'm not on the fence. I'll just be leapfrogging over the fence back and forth regularly. At the moment, the way I think about it is I think I need to watch those kickboxing fights to get a really good idea of where I think both of them were. But, I mean, at the end of the day, they're not going to fight an MMA fight. I think it'd be amazing if Izzy actually shot for takedowns against Pereira. Probably wouldn't be a bad thing to do early on just to make him think. But I can't see Izzy doing that. I can see this being a kickboxing match. Now, Izzy might be faster. Izzy might be more technically skillful. But I tell you what, the power of Pereira, I think, is scary. And I think Izzy might go into that fight and he will not be able to avoid the images of him being revived with an oxygen mask and all that kind of stuff that's floating around the internet. And I don't know, man. I think it's going to be a really fascinating fight. I'm fascinated to watch it. As it stands now, I'd really be concerned because I think both of them will be two of the most elite strikers that have ever fought each other in the UFC. And I think Pereira might only have to catch him once, whereas Izzy might have to catch him a few times. And I just think when it's evenly matched like that, you favour the power. And and the other thing with Izzy is he's always fighting guys that are a fair amount shorter than him. Vittori, Whittaker, Cannoneer. He towers over them. He's not doing that, Pereira. Pereira's his size, it seems. So yeah, I just I worry for Izzy in that fight, actually.
Are you going to actually make a call on it? You're still sitting on the fence, mate. Who are you saying?
Right now, as it stands,
yep.
I'd put my neck out there and say Pereira.
All right. Well, look, talking about some heavy hands. The heavy hands were all over the place in this next fight, which was one of my favourite fights of the night. And we're talking about Barbarena versus Robbie Lawler. Hey, it was great, wasn't it?
It was, again, that proper old school. With Robbie Lawler, you know what you're getting. I mean, he's 40 years old. He's taken an awful lot of damage. For his own safety and health, he probably should think about retiring. But as a fan, the day he retires will be so sad because he is, whether he's doing 5-round title fights against the likes of Carlos Condit or Rory McDonald, or whether he's in a scrap with Brian Barberina, he is entertainment from start to finish. He was landing big, heavy strikes. I felt like he was getting the better of Barberina.
He looked
landing
great.
More impactful. I thought he looked fantastic. And then
Barbarina, I'm really struggling not to sing Barbarina by the Beach Boys. But Barbarina, the elbows I thought were really clever. Like the way he was just throwing them, he was throwing the shots, and he was throwing a lot of big combinations as well, which I thought was. But he was throwing punches in bunches, whereas Robbie was being a bit more choice, but was probably causing more damage with his strikes, Robbie. But, you know, as much as we want to sit and revel in what an incredible career Robbie's, you know, had to date. Props to Brian Barberena because he looked fucking brilliant. Like he absolutely stood there toe to toe with Robbie. He ate all of them shots and he never stopped throwing shitloads of punches and elbows. And I think them elbows were causing Robbie trouble. And then, yeah, you know, what a fucking win for Brian Barberena to have him, like, you know, as he said in the post fight, like, you know, he was a real hero, you know. I looked up to the guy and, you know, no one at 170 is not going to have, like, mad love for Robbie Lawler. You know, he's a hero, man. And, you know, he's one of the greats. And we'll get on to another great that's the call time on their career in a moment. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the fight with Nick Diaz, that was fun. I don't know what's next for Robbie. Is there anyone at 170 you'd want to see him fight? I don't know.
It'd only be like proper legends and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Not particularly, you know, it's Legends League stuff, you know, bring back Tyron Woodley for one fight so he can get a nice win or something. I mean, that's all I'm really interested in seeing for Robbie Lawler. But having said that, you put him against anyone with that kind of just like less technical, less grapple, just like, you know, those old-fashioned brawler type fighter, it's going to be a fun fight. It's going to be a really fun fight, so... Yeah, I've got no problems watching.
It will be a fun fight, but do you want to see Robbie keep taking that sort of damage though? Do you know what I mean? He got hit a lot last night, and like you say, he's 40, and he's been, you know, hit a lot in his career. And I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily be super excited to see him fight again, like, because, you know, he looked great in both rounds, really, but obviously he just didn't sort of come out the second round looking too great. But I'm not keen to see any more Robbie Lawler. Like, Brian Barberena was an absolute savage, but, you know, he's not a sort of ranked guy. I guess give him, if he's going to fight, give him, like you say, someone that's in the sort of twilight years of their career that, you know, you could get a bit of a fun fight, but yeah, I'm not mad keen to see him get back in there.
I think that's fair enough. I'm not either.
Sean O'Malley. Obviously, there's always a lot of attention on him and a lot of hype and interest. And I thought the fight started well. I thought Pedro was clearly trying to hack away at Sugar's legs and was having success there. Don't get me wrong, Sugar didn't look troubled. He looked very comfortable in there. Probably, you know, until what happened, probably it's got to be the highest ranked fighter O'Malley's ever fought. I think when he fought Cheeto, obviously Cheeto wasn't anywhere near where he is now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought Munoz like put in a good performance, and then second round, you get a... Do you know what? And it's so easy when you watch them replays to go, well, it didn't look that bad. Like, but, you know, you see the ones sometimes where, like, literally the finger just gets lost and you think, oh, my God, that's disgusting. But it almost looked like it didn't really go in his eye. It sort of went up. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor, and I'm certainly not Pedro Munoz, and I'm not suggesting in any way, shape or form that, you know, Munoz tried to get out of that fight. He, you know, he's a killer and you know, obviously wanted to get O'Malley's name on his record because it's a great name to get. But yeah, I'll take that back. I'm going to get on the fence here and say that I've since seen Pedro's post on social media, his eye swollen to fuck, it doesn't look good. And you know, I've literally been poked in the eye by like my little nephew and that, and I've like literally cried like a baby for ages, thinking I'm just never going to see again. So, you know, having someone like Sugar Sean throw a big palm in your face and that finger goes anywhere near your eye is, you know, and also if you're fighting Sean O'Malley, you don't want to be a hero and fighting with like, you know, blurred vision in one of your eyes or something when someone's got hands as rapid as Sugar's. So, you know, the smart fighter will assess that moment and go, do you know what? Why do I want to carry on fighting this and not be the fighter I am? Like, I'm gonna call time on it. And I think it's a brave move. Do you know what I mean? But do you know what I mean about when you saw the replay? It was...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I would say that from one angle, it didn't look too bad, but then they showed it on another angle and you did see his finger go in there. Because at first I was worrying about like, oh God, is not that he was backing out the fight or anything, but it just, I was like, it didn't look that bad initially, but you watch the replay for another angle and you're like, no, it did really go in there. As you said, you've seen him post on socials about how bad his eye is and stuff. Also, the reason that it wouldn't make sense for him to find a way out of the fight is that I think you can make a strong argument that he won that first round. It was a really...
100% won the first round.
Yeah, uneventful, pretty dull, just a bunch of leg kicks, not much going on, but won the first round with that. Had, again, not very fan-friendly, but had a game plan to be able to sort of nullify O'Malley a bit. And I know O'Malley was sort of feeling himself a little bit more in the second round, but... I don't know. I think the smart thing to do is probably just to hope that Munoz recovers very quickly and you run that back as soon as you can. That's probably the best thing to do. Would you run it back or would you make him fight someone else?
Yeah. Definitely. Like, yeah, roll it back. Like I say, he took that first round. Second round, Sean was starting to find his range and he was letting his hands go a bit more. It was warming up to be a really exciting fight. And, yeah, it's just a shame that we never got to see the end of the second and the third. So, definitely roll it back. Like, I don't think Sean O'Malley should get... You know, he didn't do anything to deserve to get anybody else in the top ten. He hasn't been Pedro Munoz yet. Like, the hype can only carry you so far, I think. And, yeah, like, Pedro Munoz done nothing wrong. He should definitely, you know... if that went to the scorecards, that he would have took that. So, yeah, roll it back. 100%.
Yep. Shall we move on to the prelims?
Yeah, let's do that. And not everybody at City Kickboxing had a great night. Brad Riddell really did not have a good night. Jalen Turner had a spectacular night. He made that look easy.
He really did. He caught him on the feet with a good shot and then just got that guillotine. And, yeah, I thought that was so impressive. You could argue that's the most impressive moment of the night. I know that Volk doing that to Holloway probably takes it, to be fair. But I just think...
Yeah.
I was expecting a really good fight between Jalen Turner and Brad Riddell. I always really liked Brad Riddell, but... Turner, as you say, made that look so easy. And he's now going to be in the top 15. He's going to be ranked 14th. I think Jalen Turner now, give him the loser of Fiziev versus RDA. That's what I'd like to see. That fight's coming up very soon. I think it might even be this week.
I'm down with that, mate.
Fiziev RDA. And I think that would take him into the top 10 if he beat maybe the loser of that fight. So I think that could make a lot of sense. The one thing he did say that I didn't like is he said that, you know, oh, yeah, I want to get in here again at the end of the year or early next year. And I'm like, mate, you've just smashed a guy in like 40 seconds or whatever it is. You should get back in there as quick as you possibly can. Build on that momentum, fight someone new quickly. And that
took no damage and got in and out of there in 45 seconds. Why are you talking next year?
Yeah,
makes
man.
No sense.
I think he should be aiming to get in there within the next 3 months if he can. I mean, good to earn another paycheck, fight someone. Mm. I mean, he should be fighting someone ranked above him anyway after a performance like that. So get that going. I think if he waits until January or February, people are just going to forget all about this performance. So I think that's the only 100% mistake he made last night. What was the next one on the card we're looking at? Should we go to Ian Garry, our friend Ian Garry?
Your Your internet's getting really quite bad. Hopefully it'll calm down and it'll sort itself out. But hopefully we've got a little backup audio. So if you're listening and you've not got any glitching and you're wondering what we're talking about, we've got a little backup audio. So hopefully everything will be all right. But if you get a few little bits of glitches, then bear with us, people, because we had to do this show, and as mentioned at the beginning, Blake's in Belfast under a pile of cushions that smell of old men. Okay, well, look, the next fight I've got here is Jim Miller and Cowboy, and I mean, I thought it was a great fight. Really impressed with that. Jim Miller, legit legend. Don Cerrone, legit legend. Got a great choke, brilliant guillotine on Cowboy. Seemed to get the arm in there as well. And yeah, and 1 minute 30 odd of the second round, Cowboy taps, and a great win for Miller, and it signalled the retirement of Cowboy. And I thought the way that was dealt with, initially I thought, oh, don't steal Jim Miller's moment. You know, he's got this win. And obviously that fight should have been not Jim Miller. It was meant to have been the Joe Lauzon fight that seemed to just be cursed and not ever going to happen. And it won't happen now because Cowboy took off his gloves and his Stetson and left it in the middle of the octagon. What a career. As DC said, definitely going to be, or was it Joe, I think, said definitely going to be in the Hall of Fame, and rightly so. Rarely did you see Cowboy in a boring fight, and you see Cowboy, you know, you talk about Jalen Turner saying, I'll look to fight, you know, end of the year or next year. Cerrone's like, I'll fight next week, you know, and he would take these last minute fights, you know, fresh out of a fight, and he always shows up, and he always puts on a performance, you know, and he's now wants to be a movie star, and all, you know, and best of luck to him, man. He's given us so much entertainment over the years, and absolute legit Hall of Famer in my opinion.
Yeah, best of luck to Cowboy with whatever he does next. Jim Miller obviously becoming, I think, the most wins in UFC history now for Jim Miller.
And
Cerrone retiring, it felt right. If you, he's not done particularly well of late, and just feels like the right move. But as you say, Cerrone's one of those guys that when I started watching the UFC, I was always impressed with this guy that, just as you say, 6 weeks later after he last fought, he'll be fighting again. He'll take on anyone, anytime, anywhere. Kind of a true, like, fighter's fighter, it seems. And
absolutely.
And that's something that I think you've always got to respect Cowboy for, even though he was never, like, one of the elite-level fighters. He was, you know, he never seemed to thrive in the big occasions when the pressure was really on. That was always a criticism of Cowboy. But, God, he was entertaining. And he was, as a fighter's fighter, he was always there looking for the next fight, just weeks after the last one. And I think Dana always loved him, and he'll be a Hall of Famer for sure.
Absolutely. And props to Jim Miller. I've just gone on Tapology and look, Jim Miller is 84. Like, to be 84 years of age and got the most wins in UFC history, very, very impressive. He'll have one of your Werther's originals. Right, coming up next, our homie, Ian Garry. It's not just Ian Garry anymore. Ian Mercado. Garry, from what I gather, that's his wife's Layla's middle name. Name, and they're gonna, obviously she's pregnant at the moment, and they're gonna sort of double barrel the name, which I'm loving that. Loving Ian Garry. I don't know if you've noticed, Mr. Harrison, but posted a little thing on the socials saying congratulations to our homie Ian Garry, enjoy the Skittles. Sent us a little message back saying it's always about the Skittles, boys. And and I mean, I thought this was a really good test for Ian Garry. I thought Gabe Green was game as fuck. He came to take that, and I thought again, he was throwing loads of stuff and was quite wild, Gabe Green. And I thought Ian Gary was just really measured, just looked like it's all coming together for him. His timing was precise. His right hand looked solid. I was loving the knees he was throwing. Just looked comfortable when he was getting in the clinch. He'd spin the clinch every time and control the clinch. I just thought he looked like a really good fighter. He's 10-0 now. And I thought it was strange. I don't know if you noticed, but there was no post-fight interview for Ian Gary.
Yeah, I did notice that. That was really annoying. So, you know, Gary's always really good on the mic, and I think it's a shame for him, really, because I think that helps really build him as a fighter, because other than Absolutely. His debut, his performances haven't exactly set the world on fire. So they've been really good performances. Yeah, no, they've been more than competent. They've been good performances, but they've not been like these amazing highlight reel knockouts or like
it's not highlight reel finishes. 100%.
And that's but in a way, that's maybe not a bad thing for Ian Gary. He's only about 24 years old. The UFC 100%. Might push him slowly because of this, because they know they've got a potential star on their hands with the way that he does chat on the mic. And he'll have the Irish fandom if he starts doing really well. That'll increase and increase. And I think they're just going to slow roll him. It's okay for that to be the case. And he's getting in his last two fights, he had the full 15 minutes in the cage on both of his last two fights in the UFC, was pretty dominant throughout, and he's learning, he's maturing, facing a little bit of adversity, and then getting that time in the cage, making sure that his cardio's always on point, and just taking everything from those 15-minute experiences. If he was getting first-round finishes all the time and then all of a sudden came up against someone that was taking him the distance, he might struggle. But now he's got that inbuilt muscle memory experience of doing those 15 minutes, and I think that will serve him really well down the line. So this isn't a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Right, I mean, this was a fight. Dricus du Plessis versus Brad Tavares.
Yeah,
I mean, Dricker seemed to just, and I think Joe or DC said it, like, as he got tired, he seemed to fight better. He was, like, literally gasping for air, but was still just throwing, like, huge shots, and it was just an absolute brawl. Actually, do you know, like, what got fight of the night, or do you know what any of the bonuses went to?
Yes, I do know the bonuses. So the bonuses were Jalen Turner, Stolyarenko, Alex Pereira, I think, and the fight of the night was Barbarina Lawler? I think it was Barbarina Lawler was the fight of the night.
I mean, so, yeah. Worthy. Absolutely. But this was another big old slugfest of beasts. And yeah, I loved it. What did you think?
Mate, I lost you. What did you say?
I just said, like, I thought it was an absolute belter. What did you think?
Oh, yeah, it was an absolutely cracking fight. I'm just struggling with this bloody internet at the moment, but I loved the fight. I think that there was potentially a head clash, really, because Dricker seemed to, like, blitz in round one quite early, and I think there was, like, a clash of heads or something. And then you saw that Dricker seemed to be quite hurt, and that seemed to lead to him going a bit all over the shop for a bit. And the commentators didn't pick up on this, but I'm sure if you watch it back quite early on, there was, as he blitzes forwards, maybe a clash of heads or something, and then DC's like, oh, he's hurt. Tavares must have caught him with something. And I think it was more of a clash of heads than anything else. And Tavares did seem to deal with him pretty easily in that first round. But then after that, Dricus du Plessis, albeit quite a chaotic style, won the next two rounds, I think, relatively convincingly. DDP will now be 12th in the rankings. Calls out Gastelum, which does make sense. It's a fight that should have been going on a little bit earlier. Got cancelled for some reason, I think. He could also maybe fight the loser of Hermanson versus Till when that happens in July. So, yeah, lots of options, Dricus du Plessis. I do think he could have made that look a bit better, though. I don't know whether the occasion got to him or what, but he did seem to get tired very, very quickly, maybe rush things a little bit, and hopefully maybe he'll calm down. But it's been a long time since he's fought. I think it's been about a year since he's fought because he was dealing with injuries and stuff like that. So, yeah, but I think I said this on the preview show, that the middleweight matchmaking on this card was superb, because we had Dricus du Plessis and Brad Tavares, and that went the way that I think the UFC would want in terms of new blood in Dricus du Plessis getting in towards that top 15. And then Andre Muniz versus Uriah Hall wasn't quite how I expected it. It was pretty dominant and comfortable for Muniz, but I did think that he would get the submission from Uriah Hall. But Uriah Hall seemed to be in there. Again, I feel bad to be critical of fighters. I don't know what it's like to step in there, but it did almost feel like Hall, and I feel like he's got a history of doing stuff like this, was in there to not get finished rather than win the fight himself. That was the feeling I had when watching it. He was just defending takedowns, but not really trying to do too much of his own offense. So Muniz with a really comfortable win there. And I would say you could do Muniz versus Strickland now. I think let's throw Muniz up the rankings. I think he's really very, very good. He's got that jiu-jitsu style, which is different to the other guys fighting at the top, like Adesanya, Pereira, Whitaker and the likes. I think give Muniz someone right towards the top like Strickland so that he could take a place in the top five and look at getting a title shot potentially soon. Fight Pass
no,
prelims?
No, I've not seen the Fight Pass prelims yet.
That was probably the most important one in terms of like what was at stake, you know, was the Muniz Hall one. And it went the way that I think we were probably all expecting, because I say Hall does have that habit of not quite turning up for these fights. He did a similar thing against Sean Strickland, I think. The other fights on the Fight Pass room was Macy Barber versus Jessica Rye. Barber defeats Rye, retires. And Macy Barber getting better and better, but I still think a long way off for challenging from a belt at 125 pounds. And then Jessica Rose Clark versus Stolia Renko. Did you see what happened to her arm?
Yeah, that's not good.
Oh, mate, it looked gross. Yeah, so that was one hell of a way to start the Fight Pass prelims, was, you know, 42 seconds after Jessica Rose Clark, another WWE moment. Jessica Rose Clark came down the aisles to Shawn Michaels' music, which I'm assuming you know very well.
I don't know what that means. No, I have no idea. Like, nerd. But
Boy? I'm just a sexy boy. Sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. Boy toy. I'm just a sexy boy.
I've never
sexy
heard that.
Sexy boy. It is an absolute tune, mate. Jessica Rose Clark came down to that, and I was all backing her for that because she came down to that music. And then Stolia Renko ended the party early by absolutely snapping her arm off.
Nothing makes me happier than the people that are in the hotel room next to yours just saying, just seen that that Blake Harrison fella go into that room. Why is he in a room on his own singing I'm Just a Sexy Boy?
Do you not have that as your routine? I like to just put on my tighty whities, look in the mirror, socks on, obviously, and just sing that song into my hairbrush.
That's a good look, mate.
That's how I used to get ready for dates. Big date tonight, yeah. I'm just a sexy boy, sexy boy. And that's what I do in my wife runs. That's me. If you're lacking confidence before a date, guys, that's what you do. You throw on your undies, you get in front of the mirror with the hairbrush, and you sing Shawn Michaels' Sexy Boy.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Oh, poor Kerry, honestly.
She knows it's a big night when I'm doing Sexy Boy in front of the mirror.
All right, dude. Well, look, thanks ever so much for listening, people. I hope you've all got as much enjoyment watching that card as what we did. It was an absolute banger. Thanks so much for listening to the episode. We've had, who have we had on the podcast that fought on this night? Ian Gary. We've had Ian on a couple of times. Go check out our episodes of Ian Gary and go and check out our chat with Alexander Volkanovsky. It's a wonderful chat. And while you're there, subscribe, check out the rest of the back catalogue, because we've had a big bundle of all your favourite fighters and we've got some good ones coming your way soon. Blake, we're back next time, right?
We're back next time, hopefully with slightly better internet. So apologies if you've got any scribbles and scrambles while we were doing this. Scribble scramble, that's a game, isn't it? Do you have a scribble scramble?
I think it's just called Scrabble, mate.
No, scribble scramble. It was a board game with like a marble.
Right. Was this around the same time as like wrestling and shit, when I was like, you know, I was probably driving then, mate?
Well, again, you've missed out, mate. Scribble scramble, yeah. And WWE. You've had a shit life.
Can I have one of them Werbers, please?
Okay, bye, guys.
See ya.